You're listening to Rick Kleffel, the Agony Column podcast. You can find additional reviews, interviews, print interviews, and book commentary 5 days a week at trashotron.com/agony.
This clearing wasn't a field. It looked like a road, but it wasn't that either. It was as if a gang had planned to build a road, had chopped away the jungle and flattened the earth, but then abruptly changed their minds. It was 20 yards wide and stretched in either direction, left and right, for as far as Stacy could see, finally curving out of sight. On the far side of it rose a small hill. The hill was rocky, oddly treeless, and covered with some sort of vine-like growth, a vivid green with hand-shaped leaves and tiny flowers. The plants spread across the entire hill, clinging so tightly to the earth that it almost seemed to be squeezing it in its grasp. The flowers looked like poppies, the same size and color, a brilliant stained-glass red. They all stood there, staring, shading their eyes against the sunlight. It was a beautiful sight, a hill shaped like a giant breast, covered in red flowers. Amy took out her camera, started snapping pictures.
Scott Smith is the author of the novel A Simple Plan. His screenplay for the film, which was filmed by director Sam Raimi, was nominated for an Oscar. His new novel is The Ruins. One of the things that strikes me is that you tell very intimate scale stories. You focus on the details.
Oh, thank you.
Tell me why and how you come to that. Because as I understand it, your two novels, though they have that same kind of intimate scale and focus on characters, they came about through very different writing processes.
It's true. I guess I feel, as a reader, that I feel a real need for to be able to visually picture what the story is happening. I books that are really good books that don't have that, I often feel a disconnect with. And so I think in my own writing, I have that same sort of need to try to visually make as clear as possible, at least for myself, what the story is taking place and where it is.
One of the things that strikes me is that as you see the world in miniature, you evoke the larger world just of necessity because we're all surrounded by the larger world. As you create the characters in the ruins, were you thinking of them as exemplars of the larger world, or did they just come to you whole cloth as people that you were going to send out?
I think the latter more. I think that, especially with the ruins, I mean, my first book, A Simple Plan, I did a lot of preparation, pre-work before I did the work. I did a very detailed, like a 30-page single-space outline. I did character bios. I drew a map of the town where the story takes place. With the ruins, since it had been quite a long time since I'd written a novel, I started it really almost as a exercise. I wasn't certain that I was going to complete it and make it into a book, and so I didn't have an outline. Things that were very significant that happened in the book, I came to me the day that I wrote them until I was about halfway, and then I sat down and wrote an outline. But the same is true with the characters. I fell into the voice, and the characters just kind of came about organically.
Tell us a little bit, as much as you can, and that's not too much. This interview is going to focus on this book for readers who have not read it yet.
Okay.
Because it's important, I think, that this book, that we not talk about some of the plot points of this book. So tell us a little bit, as much as you can, the setup for the book.
Two young couples fresh out of college are vacationing in Cancun before three of them are starting graduate school. One of them is about to start a job. It's our last kind of fling. And they meet a German tourist and befriend him, whose brother has gone missing. And they agree, just as a day trip, to go and help him find his brother, basically, and things go badly from there.
I'm wondering, as a writer, does it feel odd for you to have written a novel that kind of hinges on a non-spoiler, that hinges on the reader being really fresh? That's unusual, because these days it's really hard to avoid being, you know, hearing essentially the entire plot of almost any novel. You see a movie, they'll show you the trailer, it'll show you everything.
Right.
So how did you approach this as a writer?
I don't think I thought about that much. Even now, I'm not entirely certain how I feel about that, because I feel like there are some readers who come to the book with misapprehensions based on the title, the ruins, and they think that it has something to do with the Maya culture, and I think they're ultimately disappointed. And so some part of me thinks, well, you know, it's not a bad thing to know more about it. I think it's like with Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho. I know in the first screenings that he ordered that the doors be shut so that no one could come in after the movie started. I mean, he was very protective of that idea that, you know, you should know nothing going in. But I watched Psycho. I knew all about it before and I enjoyed it. And so I think my hope is that even if you knew, you'd still be able to get something out of the book.
But when you write a book that puts four people in peril, you kind of write morality tales.
Mm-hmm. Right. Or cautionary tales.
Tales. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about how you structure some of both this and A Simple Plan in terms of the moral implications. A Simple Plan, you plot it out quite well in advance,
right?
Don't you?
Yes, exactly. With A Simple Plan, I was intrigued by the idea of, I think at core, how easy it is to be good if you're living in a way that corresponds to how the world wants you to live, and that once those barriers are taken down, to continue to be a good man when those temptations are there, how in my mind, how easy that temptation could draw someone off the you know, moral path or something. I think I had that for A Simple Plan. With this, with the ruins, it was more, I think, just the idea of rather than wandering off the moral path, it was wandering off the beaten path, and just how intrigued by the idea of just kind of falling into a very perilous world, I think.
Forging into the unknown. One thing that strikes me is that this is a piece I'm of horror genre fiction to some extent.
Right.
And it's also a survival tale. So one of the things that's very important is the choices that people make in
right.
a horror novel.
Right.
Did you look at the horror genre at all to see how other writers had put characters in situations where they had to make a choice? Do we go here? Do we go there? Do we do this? Do we do that?
I didn't that much. It was the original idea to write the story. I was watching a somewhat horror movie, and I felt scared at a scene, and I wanted to try to do that. But my awareness of the horror genre, both in terms of books and movies, I'm not a big horror person. I grew up reading Stephen King, Ray Bradbury, and all that, so I have that down deep. But as an adult, I haven't read that much in the genre. So the choices were more, I was split as I wrote it. There are times where it was very clear I'm trying to write this genre horror book. But then as I was writing, I was getting to the story. I think that I started to just take that horror element as almost a real world thing, and was writing in my mind a very realistic story when I was in that space.
It really shows, because you focus so well on the characters and create these characters with such detail and such a natural interaction. Have you ever been on this kind of trip that you described, two couples going somewhere?
I not to Mexico, but I have taken a trip with another couple, yeah. So I'm familiar with the inner dynamics that maybe aren't always as pleasant as you might want them to be.
Tell us a little bit about how you... Well, first off, what movie were you watching?
Oh, it's actually... I'm always a little embarrassed because it's not a... People who are in the horror world would just scoff at it. It's not that scary a movie. It was Signs, the Mel Gibson movie, which is ultimately very silly. The way that it ends is very silly. But there's just a moment where a character turns and sees something. You just see a flash of a night. I jumped, and it was that sort of visceral emotion that I wanted to try to create.
The visceral emotion, you certainly create visceral emotions in this novel. And one of the ways you do that is to, as I say, you've done a lot of detail work. So tell us a little bit about how you created some of the details of, you know, the people with the, you have somebody who doesn't speak English, somebody who doesn't speak Spanish, and you've got a bunch of English people. So
Right. That's
a really interesting combination, and it creates a lot of tension.
Mm-hmm. I think originally, as I said, I wasn't working that outline. I think originally I wanted to play more with the idea of the group dynamics and the four Americans initially being, I guess in a way, I hadn't really thought about it, but it's similar to A Simple Plan in the sense that when everything is going well out on the beach and it's really easy to be friendly with these people who you know nothing about, you've just met. And then as the tension built, I was going to play more with the idea of the in-group and the out-group and the ways that the four main characters would start to other the non-American characters. I ultimately didn't pursue that as much. There's a little bit of it, but and I think the language barrier was intended to add to that sort of suspense of, you know, can we trust? Who can we trust?
The trust issue is very interesting in here because it does create a lot of tension. And one of the things that you do is to keep the reader on edge, wondering just what is going to go wrong
with this
situation. And because of that, it's a survival story. These mm-hmm. people are in the woods and they probably should not be.
Right.
Did you look at some other survival stories?
In some ways, that was more of a driver and certainly a reading interest for me than the horror. I've always, even as a kid, I was really interested in the polar explorers and their accounts and things like the Donner Party. And I think I've just always, both as a kid and as an adult, just been intrigued by people and that sort of physical extremity.
The prose here really drives the story. It's very close. The whole book is written in one seamless long story. When you sit down to read it, you better be prepared to have a good long weekend to finish it, or a day or so.
Thank you.
Did you do a lot of rewriting of the prose? Did this get rehashed, or did this just come out naturally?
Different parts of the book. Some as a writer, I tend to rewrite as I go along. But there were certain sections of the book where I went through and for the most part drew things out more. If something wasn't working, I discovered that just tension-wise, it was usually, I was rushing it, I was trying to go too fast. And if I took more time and drew out the scene, it ended up feeling more gripping.
That's a really interesting effect, and you're right, that does work that way. To draw out the scene and put in more detail,
mm-hmm.
it keeps the readers grounded more.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about creating a sense of what I would call the visceral responses, because there are people, one of the things that you do well is to create scenes of just things happen. I mean, somebody goes on a hike, you know, you fall down, and that's not a good thing.
Right.
and so tell us a little bit about putting in the little bits of mishaps, how the mishaps and small incidents lead to a foreshadowing.
I think to some degree that was a result of the way that I was writing without the outline, where I would... Somehow that helped me. I would write something, a character falls down or something, and then it would just open up pathways to, I guess, mostly to doom. But I think that, I don't know, if I had outlined it, I think it would have had ultimately a different feel to the book.
The book does feel very, very organic. And one of the things that's nice about it that's really kind of jarring is we've all gone on holiday someplace, and while it's fun to be someplace that you're not accustomed to being, it's also quite unsettling. And one of the things you do from the get-go is to evoke how unsettling it is to be in a place that you don't belong, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Tell us a little bit about how you do that, and how did you discover that feeling of...
I think a lot of it was the way that the book is told is that it shifts through the four main characters' points of view. And as I started experimenting with that, there's just the certain characters' anxieties came to the forefront. And I think that just as you shift each time into through their eyes and seeing the world kind of veiled with their anxieties, I think that that aspect started to accrue as the story went on.
And your characters, not the nicest bunch of people you'll ever meet in a novel.
I get a lot of that. I don't know how I feel about that. Because the very beginning, my editor said, "Well, you know, maybe you should make some of these characters more likable." And I thought, "Well, they seem likable to me." they make selfish choices. They some of them complain. They all have their different ways that are probably negative of dealing with things. But I hoped that they would come across as three-dimensional people who had their weaknesses, as I said, which when you're on the beach in Cancun would just be, Amy tends to complain. If she gets a sunburn, she's going to complain about the sunburn. But then when you get into the more extreme situation, that trait can become, a terrible handicap. And I think I tried to do that for each of the characters.
Well, one thing that I think does really work is by making your characters less than perfect. Nobody is unchecked in terms of their niceness.
Right.
you do make them much more accessible. These seem like people we know. These seem like people you might meet at a party, whom you might find, as you say, these are fun people to hang out with at a party. But when the party's over, the party is definitely
okay. Thank you for saying that.
As a writer, you create a lot of atmosphere. And there's a lot of like little scenes, little descriptions. In one scene, there's like a mangy dog or something.
So all right. Tell
us a little bit about taking out all those details to start to unsettle the reader.
Again, I think some of that was just instinctive as I wrote. I mean, the dog, which a lot of people have responded to. I'd seen a dog with I bent to pet a dog that I noticed as I was petting was covered in ticks. I just remembered that creepy feeling, but also you've kind of bonded with this dog, and no one's paid any attention to this dog in his whole life, so he's in love with you, and yet you're have this gut reaction of I just want to get away from this dog, and so that just fell into the story. Yeah.
As you read this book, one senses what Freud called like the uncanny. There's just this sense of that something isn't right with our understanding mm-hmm. of reality, and we're about to be educated in a manner that will probably be less than enjoyable, at least for the people who are going to encounter this. How did you create this at the beginning? Did you understand, as you started this novel, did you understand how it was going to end?
I knew the ultimate ending. I knew the last line, actually, even before I'd written the first line. But I didn't know all the different, stages to get there. And I knew, as I said, the very, very first impulse was to write something that was unsettling and was would have that effect on a reader, where the effect that the tick-laden dog had on me, basically.
As we journey with these people, we experience, their identities, and their identities change as the situation grows more dire and less mm-hmm. less salubrious than mm-hmm. a party on the beach in Cancun.
Right, right.
And so you explore these themes of identity and how our identity shifts. As you created the characters, did you have a start and end point for each character, or did you?
I didn't. I think that a similar thing happens with A Simple Plan, where there is this upstanding couple in this small town, and we see them descend into this very evil way of being. And that, as I said, was much more plotted out moment by moment. With The Ruins, as the events accrued and the personalities that I sort of organically developed for them, it just naturally happened that Jeff is going to do this or Stacy's going to do that, and it all just kind of wove together.
As an example of the survival story genre, one of the things we see in survival story genre is the immediate effects of kind of simple problems, hunger, simple injury. How much research did you do into the effects of these things before you described them so vividly?
I have a neighbor who's a doctor, and he read the book, and I was very nervous because I thought there's some do-it-yourself surgery at one point in the book, and I was very anxious about him reading it because I'd had, as I said, just a lifelong interest in reading these stories, and so I think I picked up almost by osmosis details through that, but I didn't specifically research any of the events, and most of the events again surprised me as I wrote them, and so I winged it basically and hoped that it's not terribly obvious.
When people get in this small kind of group, there's a natural order that forms, and you do a great job of showing how everything rises to its own level or sinks to its own level. Yes, and again, I'm wondering, as you created these characters, did you have an idea as to what level they'd rise or sink to? Did you give them, or did they just reveal to you as you put them through the story?
I think the latter. I think a couple of the characters even surprised me to a degree in terms of, I wouldn't have anticipated it. Again, if I'd outlined it, it would have been a totally different book. I would look forward to days with certain characters and dread. And there's one character I really like to write, and there's one character who I really didn't like to write. And oddly, when I, at the end, when the book was finally done, I did a kind of word count to see. And the character I really like to write has the smallest amount of words, and the character who I disliked has the biggest amount of words. So,
oh, that's very interesting. Another aspect of this novel that is particularly well realized is timing. There's a lot of timing issues, the way things happen, the way things don't happen. And again, I'm guessing that just flowed from the pen.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, I think that, the story is very compact time-wise and location-wise and character-wise. So I think to some degree there is a... to have those boundaries around it, I think, helped in terms of the flow of the story and the structure of the story.
Well, we've been speaking with Scott Smith. He's the author of The Ruins. If you have not read the book, then do so immediately, but plan a long weekend on while you do it. If you have read the book, we're now going to discuss aspects of the book that you already know about, and we will not ruin the book for those who have read it. All right, Scott, let's get down to the good stuff.
Okay.
I'm something of a monster hound.
Okay.
I love a good monster, and you've created one of the most fascinating monsters I've read this year.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that.
So tell me, how did you come about creating this monster?
When I saw that horror movie and decided that I wanted to try to write something in that genre, I went back to a file of old ideas that I had, and I came across a story, short, what I thought was going to be a short story about people at an archaeological dig, that it had nothing to do with the vine, which is the monster in the ruins. But I thought, well, what could they dig up, basically? And I think I had an idea that, a naive idea that what would work as in the horror genre and something that's scary is often something that's not alive in a human type way, but takes on human characteristics. And whether it's Christine, like with Stephen King's with the car, and just the plant seemed, I thought it would be interesting to make a plant that you know, as the story carried along, that it took on aspects of the human. So,
what's really interesting is when described from a distance, those of us sitting here in a studio, a plant is a monster.
Right. It's preposterous.
Somewhere between preposterous and not necessarily threatening.
Right.
But you create something that's very, very threatening.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
So tell us.
It was very anxiety provoking to sit in, you know, my sort of secret space writing it while, you know, friends would say, oh, what are you working on? And I couldn't say, you know, it's a book about, you know, a talking plant. So, and all the time it was in my head. Because I could internally take that step to the side, which I think with a lot of horror, where you if you do just shift a little bit, it does become a joke or ludicrous. And so as I wrote, I was definitely, you know, trying to keep that door shut. So I appreciate you saying that.
Well, you completely succeeded. And one of the ways you do so is through the constant and well done use of body horror.
Okay.
Because one of the things that's scary to us is when our own bodies betray us.
Right.
Whether
right.
it's the brain to make you decide to go in that basement.
Right. Right.
Or it's the hand that was crushed beneath the rock and now looks like a piece of hamburger.
Right. Right.
So tell us a little bit about how you created some of the scenes of body horror in this novel. They're fairly distressing. No, they're utterly, direly distressing.
I mean, a lot of that was just writing it. I mean, I think that in terms of the some of the plot things that developed that I hadn't anticipated, that ended up having huge ramifications for the book. When Eric jumps and he cuts his knee, the day I sat down to write, I didn't know that he's going to jump. I didn't know he was going to cut his knee. And when he cut his knee, I didn't know, oh, the vine's going to get inside him, which became, you know, such a dominant driving part of the plot, was Eric's gradual sort of dissolution in the face of that. So, I'm a terrible interview subject because my answers always seem to be, well, I don't know. It just happened.
No, I think this is indicative of the quality of the writing, because what you say is interesting, because you talk about your characters surprising you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's because they come to life for the reader, too. They came to life for you, so they come to life for the reader as well.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
Did you see this movie? This book is a movie as you wrote it? Did you unroll as a film in your mind? Or
I was actually surprised that it's ended up being optioned, because for the first two-thirds. When I'd written about two-thirds of the book and I actually stopped, because I've been doing screenwriting and I did a script, someone had offered me a chance to remake El Cid, which I thought would be a lot of fun. I really wanted to do it, and it was time sensitive. So I put the book aside. And at that point, my agent got an advance from my publisher, and they also, it was optioned. And I, writing the first two-thirds, I didn't, because it feels so internal to me. And then it's very dark, and there's that quality of it being kind of a weird story. I wasn't certain that there would be film interest. I always felt Simple Plan was much more an obvious, movie transfer.
Now you've gone back and forth. You wrote, one of the questions that I think a lot of us have are 13 years. Come on, what's up?
I spent about 5 years working on a novel that just got longer and longer and longer. And when it crossed the 1,000-page mark and I was maybe a quarter of the way done, and it wasn't just that, it was also I had the increasing sense that I didn't know where I was. I was, again, writing without an outline, and I was having a lot of fun. It was probably the most enjoyment I've gotten just day in, day out writing. But I didn't know, I just knew that it was just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and there's no real turning point toward home. And at that point, the movie version of A Simple Plan came out, and I started to get offers to do screenplays, and I just ran away from that book for another 5 or 6 years, and then finally came back, and that covers the time.
Well, how does it compare to you for a writer to go back and forth between the two formats? They're very, very different.
Yeah, it was very hard to come back and do the ruins. I don't know whether that was because I'd been spending the time doing screenwriting or because I just hadn't been writing prose. But I was very anxious the whole time and felt like I didn't know what I was doing. And for the whole book. I think initially there was a little bit of unlearning reflexes or habits that I developed with the screenwriting. One of which is the slowing things down. I think that with screenwriting there is that if it's not working, you should speed it up, and discovering that, at least for this book, it felt like the opposite.
So did you ever end up finishing El Cid?
I did. It's along with the other half dozen scripts that I've done since A Simple Plan, it's in various stages of not being made. So, but I have my hopes. It was fun to do.
This book was optioned by Ben Stiller.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Stiller, horror, not an obvious connection to me. Tell me a little bit about that.
I became friendly with Ben because he was the second of five directors who was attached to direct A Simple Plan. And really, I felt taught me how to write a screenplay. Before that, Mike Nichols had been attached, and I created this just embarrassingly bad script. I think I scared him off the project, basically. And Ben came in, and I learned through going back and forth with him. And since then, a lot of the scripts that I've done have been through his production company. And his interests are incredibly diverse and very smart. And you know, something like this, I did a script for him based on the a nonfiction book about the Booth brothers, Edwin Booth and John Wilkes Booth. Is it John Wilkes who obviously assassinated Lincoln? Edwin Booth was a Shakespearean actor, and it's just the interesting subject matters that came to me through him. So I think he has a wider range of interests than maybe you'd think from Something About Mary. So,
I would definitely, I would definitely suggest that Flirting with Disaster is a full-on horror movie.
That's true.
For many of us who are uncomfortable with family matters.
Yeah.
Back to the ruins. One of the things that you did that is to increase the detail with which this monster is defined.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us, once you conceived of this monster, did you know it's all its powers, so to speak, or did they?
They came about. I knew that I wanted just. As a pure plot device, I wanted more and more to be revealed to my characters, to get more and more scary and serious as I went along. But I didn't know specifically what capacities I would ultimately have the vine capable of. And again, that just some of it just happened, you know.
One of the things that makes us an interesting monster is that there are two types of monsters that you'll find in the literature. There's one that's essentially like Jaws, which is just something, or Alien, just something that consumes,
mm-hmm.
and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are the smart ones, and the ones that like to play with their food, so
right.
to speak. This is certainly the latter.
The latter, yes.
Tell me a little bit about how you decided to make this thing play with its food.
I think a lot of that came out of just my interest in the group dynamics and the pressure mounting among the group, and so wanting the vine to put pressure on the group and to put pressure on specific characters, I think was a driving force, and so that created a lot of the playing with the food that you mentioned. Yeah.
One thing that as the creature reveals its capabilities, mm-hmm. and its intentions to the group, they too reveal back their weaknesses,
mm-hmm.
to it and to us. So Tell us how you create that kind of tension going back and forth between the strengths and the strengths that evoke the weaknesses.
Again, you know, I'm going to fail you on my, I feel like I should have a card I hold up. It's like, it just was instinctive. So much of it developed as something would happen with the vine, and then it would have an impact with one of the characters, and it would kind of ping pong back and forth through the writing as opposed to any sort of conscious choice. Which I know just makes for a very boring interview.
Oh, this is good. We like to hear about the organic writing process. Not everybody pops up an outline and writes a thesis. Okay. When you go back and look at your work, do you find things in it that you didn't realize you put there?
As in mistakes? Or
No, as in themes.
Definitely. I mean, and especially between, I thought that I was doing something just dramatically different than a simple plan, which I think on a surface level it is, but people keep pointing out thematic similarities that I hadn't anticipated and make me feel very, redundant in some way.
Yeah. Well, what did you think that you were doing different from a simple plan? In what way did you envision this as being different?
I guess it's a different genre. The simple plan was first person. An unrealistic situation in the sense that things were pushed to such an extreme, but basically based in a familiar world. And this was something about the third person and the shifting point of view. It's less scenic, I think, with a simple plan. I think that was what made it feel much more easily adaptable to film. It's very much just scene by scene by scene, where this is more narrated. There's more, it's more interior, much more time just spent with characters' thoughts. I think that was, in my mind, this huge difference.
Did you set about to write something very different?
I think so. I think I've always been repelled from the idea of doing something that I've done before. I think it's similar with the handful of screenplays that I've done. I've chosen projects that are all very different from each other.
Well, tell us about some of your screenplays.
The unmade screenplays.
The unmade screenplays, yes.
I did an adaptation of Mark Halperin's Winter's Tale.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which was a lot
of
fun.
What a beautiful book.
Yeah.
Boy.
So I think I'm one in a long line of people who have attempted adaptations of it, though. But it was great to do. It was a lot of fun.
Did you work with Mark Halperin?
I didn't. No, I went off and violated his book all on my own without any help.
And who was it slated to be the director for that?
You know, at this point, a producer has it. But it actually came to me through Ben.
Really?
So yeah, at one point he was going to direct it. And I think he's still involved producer-wise, but I don't know where the script is at this point. It's shifted studios and...
That's a very different book from A Simple Plan.
Yes.
I mean, it's got a very light kind of fantastic feel. It's not unlike The Ruins in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you pick that, or why were you picked for that?
I think it's just a great book. Mm-hmm. It felt like a real challenge to try to put it into screenplay form because it is such a sweeping, huge book. I think... I was drawn to the tone. I mean, there is a whimsical and a sweetness to it, but it's pretty, I think, a melancholy book on some level, which I think I'm always drawn to. So there's that, and there's the El Cid. There was a adaptation of a Richard Stark novel called Backflash about a heist on a casino boat on the Hudson, which was a lot of fun. There was the nonfiction book about the Booth brothers. There's a comedy actually for Ben, an original script called The Mirror about, is actually Ben playing himself and his parents who are actors playing themselves and his wife playing herself. And Ben's reflection climbs out of the mirror and tries to take over his life, basically. It's the conflict between Ben and his reflection to see who's going to claim his life, which was fun to do also.
There's another classic monster, the
yes,
doppelganger.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Which
yeah.
is very frightening. Now, that was an original screenplay.
That That was original screenplay, and it, you know, for a variety of reasons, is not happening at the moment. But
well, what made you choose that as a screenplay as opposed to a novel?
It was really, I was talking, this was after A Simple Plan, and Ben and I were, you know, talking about possible ideas, and I'd written actually a short, or I'd attempted a short story that, not obviously with starring Ben Stiller, but about someone's reflection who comes out of the mirror, that had kind of grown into a novella, but it was an unwieldy length, and I just put it aside, and I thought, well, maybe I could take that and add in different elements and create a script.
Now, do you still have that novella hanging around somewhere?
I do. I have a lot of half, two-thirds finished things that I can't bring to fruition in some way, including my 1,000 pages. Well, I have a lot of boxes in my closet. Yeah.
Do you write longhand or on a computer?
On a computer, yeah.
What kind of... what makes you decide to like pursue a subject? Why did you decide to write about these people touring the ruins? Why what attracts you to a subject?
I don't know. It's a feeling. I think there's a feeling I get when I read books that I like that and I think it is related on some level to the melancholy that I talked about with Winter's Tale. And maybe that's not quite the right word, but I know it. There's a feeling I get when I read certain things, and that I like to try to feel as I'm writing too. And I think all those projects somehow tapped into that.
This book does have a certain melancholy to it. It because it does. It is really that last fling before you enter life.
Right. Right.
Gone horrifically.
Yeah.
Where are you working on a new novel now?
I am. Finishing, I hope I'm finishing the script for The Ruins. Mm-hmm. I've done a draft. I'm incorporating the studio's notes. And I hope to start another novel afterwards, so it won't be quite as long between books as last time.
Now you have some short stories hanging around, I guess, right?
I do, yes.
And where might we find them?
I've only managed to publish a short story every 6 or 7 years or something. So you'd have to, you know, go to the library and dig very deeply.
We've been talking with Scott Smith. His new novel is The Ruins. Thank you for speaking with us, Scott.
Oh, please. Thank you.
You're listening to Rick Kleffel, the Agony Column podcast. You can find additional reviews, interviews, print interviews, and book commentary 5 days a week at trashotron.com/agony.